Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to answer the question that is posed in the podcast title, or in the episode's title, is this podcast anti-union? There's an obvious answer here, and that obvious answer is no, of course not. This podcast is very much pro-union, but it's still a question worth addressing because ostensibly that question is the reason that I got fired from the Carrier Academy. If you are a regular listener, then you've already heard this story, but in brief, my local union president came to my station, pulled me outside along with his two vice presidents, and told me that he was removing me from my position as a Carrier Academy instructor, a job that I was very passionate about. And, you know, I love teaching, obviously, which is why I do this podcast, and I'm passionate about it, and I was very good at it. And he removed me because he said my podcast is anti-union. Now, in fairness to him, you know, at first, right, I was shocked, and he caught me flat-footed. Like, I definitely did not see that coming. And later on in the day, when I kind of got my feet under me, I called him and asked him, dude, do you really think my podcast is anti-union? Because, like, I listened to it. I think I would know. And he backpedaled and just said that I'm not a good fit to be an instructor. So went from a bad reason to no reason at all to being arbitrary, which is not better. But regardless, statements like that always make me think. And, you know, they're a good opportunity for reflection, to look inside yourself and think, well, maybe they're right. And let me give you an example of this. When I was in high school, I was insufferable. I was full of myself. I thought I was smarter than everybody. I looked down on other people. I was smug. And some of those flaws, especially the smugness, still come out sometimes today. And I can't stand it. I fight against it. I put in active effort not to be that insufferable person that I was in high school. And I go to therapy, and it's something that I work on in counseling. It's something that my wife will point out to me because I don't want to be that person. And I feel like I'm doing a good job of it, but of course I feel that way. It's me, you know? And so when that part of me started to change was when I took the criticism that other people were giving me seriously and started to listen and think, well, maybe the narrative in my head isn't true. Maybe everybody else is right. And, you know, of course, that's reasonable. Yeah, if everybody sees one thing and you see the other, it's possible that everybody else is right. And so that brings me back to the podcast and that statement from my local union president that my podcast is anti-union. Is it true? Well, let's do some reality testing. That's always the key. When you think you might be crazy, compare what's in your head to what actually exists in the real world and see if it matches up. So, do I stand against the NALC? Am I in opposition to the NALC and maybe want to see the NALC dissolved? No, that's an easy answer. Absolutely not. I am in favor of the NALC. I want to see the NALC, if anything, get stronger and to get more complete membership and stuff like that. Do I discourage people from joining the union? Absolutely not. In fact, again, it's quite the opposite. When I was teaching at the Carrier Academy, I actively encouraged people to join. It was something that I would harp on with the people in the class, and I've signed people up at my own station. But this kind of dodges the question because what was actually accused was not that I, Alan, am anti-union, is that the podcast is anti-union. And so is that true? Well, let's look at the evidence. So first, of course, you listen to my podcast, you would know if it's anti-union. Do you think it's anti-union? If you do, send me an email, classesofmail@gmail.com, and let me know. Of course, you need to have arguments in there that present your case, but maybe you're right. Maybe I am anti-union and I'm just so crazy I haven't noticed it. But I will tell you that, well, we'll get into more evidence as this goes along. So the accusation, it hit home, and you know, it's something that I'm trying to take seriously. So one of the things that my union president mentioned specifically when he was giving examples of me being anti-union was that I called out by name my business agent, the business agent here in the region that I'm in. And I'm certainly not going to say that person's name here. There's no possible way to know who it is. It could be anybody. And I wouldn't say so here. But there's this part of me that thinks that the real reason, that that's actually the real reason that I got fired from the academy, that it was that business agent who contacted my local union president and ordered him to fire me. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe it's not. The only reasons that I've ever gotten from my local president is that, you know, again, anti-union or arbitrary. And that's where it stands. So maybe that's it. You know, but the fact is, I have been critical of union leadership. And I think that it's reasonable to be critical of union leadership. So I am guilty of that. I am guilty. My podcast is guilty of being critical of some members of union leadership. Does that make the podcast anti-union? I don't think it does. I mean, and that includes Brian Renfro, the national president. I will say his name. I've been critical of him. Now, does that make the podcast anti-union? I will answer that with an analogy. I am a Buffalo Bills fan. I'm a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan, and for most of my life, that has been an unfortunate curse, but it is what it is. And I remember way back in like the late 90s, there was this quarterback named Rob Johnson, and he had the team doing okay, and he got injured kind of late in the season, and Doug Flutie took over. And the Bills wound up winning their last three games under Doug Flutie and made it into the playoffs. And Doug Flutie was a real fan favorite. And he was a favorite in the locker room. You know, he was a little fella and just played with a ton of heart. And I love the guy. And then Flutie Flakes, of course, his cereal that helped was like for a charity for his kid's disease or something like that. So anyway, the Bills get into the playoffs. And then for their first playoff game, they play what were then the Tennessee Titans. Oh, I guess they're still they had become the 10. It doesn't matter. And Rob Johnson was healthy, and so the coaches decided that they were going to start him over Doug Flutie. And the Bills wound up losing that game in what would come to be known as the Music City Miracle. And I still feel to this day that if they would have stayed with Doug Flutie, they would have won. And Doug Flutie was a winner, and the fans loved him. So I was critical of that coaching decision. I'm still critical of that coaching decision, and shit, it's 25 years later. Maybe it's time for me to let that go. But that was not the first time I was critical of the Buffalo Bills leadership, and it won't be the last time that I was critical of their leadership. But does that mean that I'm not a fan of the Buffalo Bills? No, of course not. It's entirely possible to be a fan and to still have legitimate criticism at the same time. I love my wife desperately, and I'm fully devoted to her, and she's the greatest. But I, you know, I have my complaints, and she has hers about me, even though I'm essentially perfect as a husband. You know, you can still have that love and have it be tempered with reality, and you see things that there's room for improvement. So it's similar to loving the NALC, but being unhappy that we have a president who was so drunk that he didn't show up for contract negotiations. Now, can I love the NALC? Can I be pro-union and not be a fan of Brian Renfro? Yeah, I think I can. I think I can. And, you know, I would say not only is it possible, it's almost mandatory. So I'm disappointed in certain things in our union, and I think that it's time to improve those things. Because if you don't like something and you point it out, you know, you have that criticism, but then you don't offer like constructive ways to fix it or what you're going to do about it or anything like that. It's just complaining. And I fancy myself as not being a complainer. I do certainly see things wrong in the world or that I perceive as wrong in the world, but I also want to fix them. I see paths to correction. And my recent endorsement of the concerned letter carriers is a big part of that steps toward correction. So yeah, The answer is obviously yes, it's possible to be pro-NALC, to be pro-union, and still be critical of some members of leadership. So now that that issue is put to bed, we've essentially answered the question at the head of the podcast. Now let's talk about unions in general, not just the NALC, but unions. I am very much pro-union. They're important for a bunch of reasons. And one of the biggest reasons is that they shift the balance of power from the wealthy capitalist to the worker. Unions allow for better distribution of the rewards of having a successful business. It's not just the entrepreneur or the capitalist who makes a business successful. It's all of us. It's you and me with our literally blue collars that make this thing go. And I like the idea that the rewards of successful business can be shared. You know, the rich are going to get richer no matter what we do. But the unions, labor unions, help the poor to get richer. Unions help in getting better working conditions. And unions hold management accountable. In a normal business situation, management has all the power. They can change the rules anytime they want. They can fire, they can hire, they can discipline, they can do almost anything. I mean, there's labor laws, which are kind of like a national version of a labor union in a way, but they don't do what our actual union does, like what the NALC does. And how do we accomplish these things? We do it with a contract. And that contract, it's everything. So let's talk about the NALC in particular. In 1971, NALC President James Rademacher signed the first collective bargaining agreement with the USPS. Before that, there was no contract. So today we have the national agreement, and it's ensconced in this book called the JCAM, the Joint Contract Administration Manual, which I have read from cover to cover on this podcast, as you know, and it's over 400 pages long. And in that JCAM, every single word of that JCAM represents a concession from management that was won by our union. Things that we had to fight for, things that we had to bargain for, that's the fruit of it right there. Things like penalty overtime, the overtime desired list at all, the amount of health benefit contributions, the parking spaces for our LLVs and our personal vehicles, and even the grievance process itself, all of it came through negotiations, through union pressure, through, in the early days, a strike. And that's the point. That's all this interpretive language. It was all a negotiation. And it came, you know, the language that's in the JCAM, right? In addition to the contract, there's all this additional language. And that came from the grievance process, from interpretations of the contract being tested through interpretive rulings, from us standing up and saying, this is the way we think it is. And management says that's the way we think it is. And we take this out and we test it. And that JCAM, between the contractual language, all the stuff around it, this stands as an edifice to what our union is all about. And that's why, as stewards, our primary job of enforcing the contract is so important. We are the people, as stewards, who make sure that all of that work and all those concessions and everything from those people who came before us, we're the ones who make sure that it actually matters. We're the ones who make sure that management upholds its end of the collective bargaining agreement. The collective bargaining agreement. Collective. All of us together make that happen. The union fought for all of that. Every article of the contract represents an agreement between management and the union that we're going to behave a certain way. Management's going to behave a certain way. We're going to deliver the mail in a certain way. Management's going to run the workroom floor in a certain way. And the management and the union agreed to every single item in that contract. There's nothing in there that was done unilaterally. All of it represents this agreement. I didn't decide personally. You didn't decide personally. This is done collectively. And that agreement is how we've all said, this is how we're going to run things. So for me personally, as a steward, it's my job to make sure that those agreements are respected. Make no mistake, there are things in the contract that I would like to change. There are things in the contract that I think are inefficient, things that are counterproductive. And I'll give you an example. I have had jobs, like before I came here, I worked in food service for a while. I actually used to manage a Little Caesar's Pizza. Oh, that was an awful job. Awful job. But the pizza was good. So anyway, as the store manager, I had to know every single job in the store. And so when we got busy, I would have to fold boxes. I would have to make pizzas. I would have to answer the phone. I would have to route deliveries. I would have to make dough. You know, all that stuff I had to do as a manager. And to me, it feels really inefficient that we do the opposite with our management at the post office, that they are forbidden from stepping in and doing work that needs to be done. But this is why we have a collective bargaining agreement, because I'm sure I'm probably wrong about this, right? I'm sure there's some big picture that I'm not seeing where this would wind up screwing the rank and file workers. I mean, it would take our hours away. Maybe that's the only argument. I don't know. But again, that's kind of my point, right? Is that it's not up to me. I don't have the contractual authority to change these things. And I don't have the moral authority to ignore these things. The NALC has the exclusive right to bargain on our behalf. And that's what they've done with every contract for the last 50 years. You know, the contracts are never ideal. We never get everything we want. Right now, I just settle for a damn contract. But regardless, it's a negotiation. And we have to do the best we can with the contract that we're given. That's our deal, right? That's what we've agreed to. So let's talk about who is actually anti-union. There are people out there, you probably know some of them, who want to pick and choose which parts of the contract we enforce. There's some people who want to let management off the hook for certain provisions because they're inconvenient, because it's easier to just get along. And so, oh, we don't need to worry about that. You know, we're just going to get along and we're just going to cruise. Don't worry about what's in the contract. No, fuck that. The get along is the contract. That is the get along. That's how we have decided that we're all going to get along, because all parties have agreed to that contract and all parties are bound by it. And it is not up to you, it is not up to me to unilaterally change that contract. That's who's anti-union, people trying to do that. So when a local union, and you've probably heard these stories, they decide to stop enforcing the Article 8 overtime rules because it's no big deal to let John work an hour overtime on Samantha's route as long as John's willing. No, that's who's anti-union. You let that shit go, you let that camel get its nose under the tent. Next thing you know, that camel's inside the tent. We fight for the entire contract. And if John wants overtime, he can get on the list. And if management wants to work John overtime, despite his not being on the list, then they're going to face a sanction from that contract. The union fought for those provisions. We all collectively decided that that's the way this thing is going to run. And I don't have the moral authority to ignore it. Ignoring it, in my opinion, that's anti-union. When a local union decides that it's no big deal to let a CCA drive her own vehicle on a route, because, hey, at least she's getting hours, you know, and the CCAs are struggling. We don't want to take that away from her. That's who's anti-union. Because, yeah, maybe she can drive her own vehicle, but we have drive-out agreements so that if management wants her to drive her own vehicle, she can do it, but she's entitled to extra compensation. That's what we've agreed to. The union fought for that compensation, and dismissing it and just letting it go, that's anti-union. When a local union decides that they're not going to do their local labor management meetings because it's just inconvenient, nobody cares, and whatever, that's who's anti-union, is the people just ignoring that. That stuff is in the agreement for a reason. We agreed to those meetings for a reason. And when you disregard them, you disrespect the people who made that local agreement, the people who fought for that, our own union brothers and sisters and siblings. When you disregard the provisions of that, that's who you disparage. When a local union turns its back on its members' legitimate grievances because it's just too much work, that's who is anti-union. When that comes up, you reach out for help. You ask people. You try whatever you have to do to stand up for your brothers and sisters. Because letting that shit go, that is anti-union. You know, our brothers and sisters and siblings in this union banded together to build it, to make it strong, to get it where it is. And we work through all kinds of divides, racial divides, ethnic divides, gender divides, cultural divides. At a time like back in the 1970s, when those divides were a lot bigger than they are now. And they're still significant in a lot of places and to a lot of people, but not like it was back then. But we overcame all of that. And we won concession after concession to get where we are today. And we still have a long way to go. And we can only get there together. And so I'm here to tell you, I am pro-union. This podcast is pro-union. And yeah, I'm critical of Brian Renfro. I'm critical of management. I am a proud supporter of James Henry and the Concerned Letter Carriers because I want better for this union. I actually want that contract to be respected. And I want us to fight for our brothers, our sisters, our siblings in this union. And that's what I stand for. And that's what this podcast is. I know a lot of times it doesn't feel like it because I'm just reading the JCAM. But I'm doing that for a reason. Because when we're empowered, when we understand what these rights are that we all fought for, then we actually have a chance at enforcing them. When we have no idea what our rights are, we don't know when they're being taken away. So that's what I'm going to keep doing. And I want you guys to keep listening with me. Thank you guys for listening to this. I know it was a bit of a rant, but sometimes these things just have to be said. So that is all for now. I will catch you guys next time.